Oh, that's what it is. It's the Ryan Slaperl dance music.
There you go.
Why are you singing that while going to the bathroom?
Because I like to dance while I'm having a piss. Because we don't have to touch anything as men. So I can just, you know, gyrate a little bit.
Yeah, and then you spray all over the bathroom.
Oh, it's careful. You got to be careful.
Okay. All right, Paul, let me see. What do you sound like?
You want to see what I sound like? Why don't you listen to what I sound like instead?
Much better, much better. Whatever that was is gone. It wasn't the normal breakup static. It was like a tinny, like you were talking through a piece of saran wrap. And it was vibrating funny.
How do you know I wasn't?
Well, unless you were in your gimp costume, you know.
How do you know I'm not?
Okay. Is it your Mugatu gimp costume?
How do you know I'm not? Perhaps it is.
I'm in a Mugatu with a ball gag costume.
Zed's dead, baby.
Okay, all right. Nor the battle to the strong.
All right, so you go, Bill.
Yeah.
Go, Bill, go!
I make things go.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, our never-ending, well, eventually ending trek through the Deep Space Nine universe. And today we are covering a rather somber episode of Deep Space Nine. And with me this time around is orderlies Leyland and Spataro. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
I'm doing pretty good, except for this self-inflicted phaser burn.
Well, you're not supposed to shave with a phaser, Paul.
Oh. I knew it was something. But I thought, maybe if I did that, you'd send me home.
Just make sure if you're going to lose your lunch, make sure it goes back in the replicator so we can re-eat that or something. You think they could do that? Like, if you threw up, could they put it in a replicator and, like, you know...
Turn it into steak.
It's like... While I was sick...
Yeah, the very least, turn it into cat food for Spot.
No, they just break it down. I mean, because the guy put his lunch back in there and it got re-replicated as soup or, you know, as something else. So, I mean, if it's organic material... I mean, could you put a pair of socks in there and get a hot dog?
I don't.
Meh. I mean, because it's all matter.
Socks.
It's like, I don't need these socks anymore. I want something to eat.
I don't need these socks. I'm hungry.
Bill, why are you naked and fat? I ate all my clothes. I don't know what happened. None of my clothes fit, so I ate them. Which, in turn, made me fatter, so... Oh, maybe Federation replicated food. Does replicated food... Well, I guess it would have to have calories or there'd be no point eating it. It'd be like eating cardboard. You can tell I really don't want to talk about this.
Well, let's touch on that for a moment. Before you even get to the episode, did you dislike this one?
No. But this is, again, this is a case to where I don't remember this episode at all. And almost like I watched it anew. I mean, this is getting close. It's probably because this was aired in late October of 1996, and of course the episode we're talking about is Nor the Battle to the Strong. And I know for a fact my daughter was close to being born. She would have been born a month later. Yes, actually a month later. So I probably was not watching a lot of TV, and I probably totally missed this. So that's this was, you know, a first time viewing as far as my memory goes.
Okay. So that said, now that you've given us a little background on it, why don't we get to it?
Well, you want to cover any news first?
Is there
any news? Andy, yes, one there new, is. We new have news.
Of, new piece of old news. And now, coming to you now, old news.
Old news. Delivered by somebody young and handsome. As revealed,
oh, we got
on
a guest
Spider-
star on.
Yes, we
yeah,
have.
Yeah, where's that guy?
We got to, we're bringing J. David Wheater back. As revealed on Simon Pegg's podcast last week, where he's plugging the new Mission Impossible film.
Has
made the rounds of the internet news cycle. Paramount are working on two Star Trek movies simultaneously, but they have also announced a director for the next Star Trek movie in the reboot canon, the Kelvin timeline, whatever the hell you want to call it, JJ Trek, New Trek, whatever. And it is, he said, desperately trying to Google.
I don't know why they don't go back to, I forget who it is that directed Beyond, but I liked that episode, that movie. I would have just gone right back to him again.
It was one of the directors.
I would
of
I
Jessica
would have gone
Jones.
Back to Simon Pegg and that.
She did some.
Yeah,
did
it's. Just, yes, it is S.J. Clarkson.
I said C.J.
So it is not Quentin Tarantino.
Well, the Quentin Tarantino script is apparently still being developed. But there is no indication yet that Tarantino is up to direct it. But the script for Star Trek 4, as it is currently being called, was written by J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, and again will be produced by Abrams and Bad Robot, but it will be directed by this new lady who, like Bill said, has worked on episodes of Jessica Jones and other stuff.
I knew they were doing one movie. I didn't know they were doing two movies simultaneously.
Well, they're working on two. Whether or not both go into production is a completely different thing, isn't it? And also, remember when Star Trek Generations went into production, they had two scripts in play there as well. The one they ultimately went with by Ron Moore and Brannon Braga, and Maurice Hurley was writing one as well, which only had Captain Kirk in it, didn't have any of the other crew.
That film probably would have been better if they had gone that route, because the rest of the crew in it seemed so gratuitous that it, you know, I don't know.
Well, the rest of the crew, the whole crew wasn't even in it.
Yeah, that's part of it too. Only... And they had people delivering lines that shouldn't have been theirs. I don't know.
God bless you. Excuse me. So that's the
somebody get a mask
this time. There is going to be another J.J. Trek movie, which is good news as far as I'm concerned. I think Star Trek Beyond really cracked the code on that one. I was a moderate fan. I wouldn't say fan. I was entertained by the 2009 one, largely because I'm entertained by anything that has Rachel, what's her name in it, from Continuum. Can't even remember her name.
Obviously
no, it's not. I am, actually. He's absolutely brilliant. And also a bit of all right to look at. She was the green woman. She was the Orion slave girl. That Rachel Nichols. That's who it is. And I thought it had some interesting ideas in it, and they could go somewhere, and then they promptly dropped the ball into darkness, which I didn't like at all. But Star Trek Beyond, I thought, was the best Star Trek movie since 6. I really did enjoy it a lot, and it's held up on repeated viewings as well. So I was looking forward to that cast getting another film and seeing where they went with it.
I agree.
Yeah, I
although
think...
Although I am the defender of the second one to a small extent. To a small extent. I'm not saying that I sit there and say it was a good movie. If he just had not been Khan, and they had not done the remake of those scenes at the end,
excise everything Khan involved from that movie, and it's fine.
Yeah, to me, there was a lot to like in that movie, even though I don't think it was a good movie.
And that, you know, I never thought about that. I mean, it really, if you just took out all the Con references, that movie is, it doesn't change. Well, I mean, it changed. I mean, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. The podcast that I just mentioned that I was listening to, where they were talking to Simon Pegg, they actually outright asked him what he thought about that. What did he think about Star Trek Into Darkness generally being regarded to be the worst of the movies? And he was like, it's not worse than Star Trek V as a film, I'm telling you, man. And when we were making it, we thought all that, those Star Trek II callbacks were fun. We thought they would be a fun thing to do. But, you know,
they were obviously fun up to a point, and then it went to, now you just, it felt like it was insulting me. It's like, really?
Yeah, enough. that was the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. If you want to go back and listen, Simon Pegg's done two episodes of that. Both of them are very good listen. Simon Pegg always gives good interview.
So you said there's with two movies in production now. Is
two,
that
two movies in development? Is not two movies in production.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's very
is the other one also in the Kelvin universe or something else? Or they didn't.
We know nothing about the Quentin Tarantino one at the moment. Other than
that's the one they're saying possibly is the other one. You know what? I don't really care. I don't know if I want him to do a Star Trek movie.
I think they're very. You know, they're very unlikely to put two into production at the same time. What they're probably doing is they're going to review what is presented to them on both of these, both the ends of this pre-production stuff, make a decision on which one to go with, and possibly put the other one on the back burner, but or possibly, you know, just totally shit can it, depending on what, you know, what they do with the first one and what the reaction is to it, and then, you know, that'll dictate their actions going forward.
So, and the fact that they've picked a director for one of them kind of implies that one is further along than the other one.
Yeah, right? And there's also, you know, there's Tarantino has some baggage lately, so they might be thinking, let's wait a little while on his, and then we can, you know, by the time we get to it, maybe things will have, you know, been swept under the rug.
Yeah, because the Tarantino stuff, he seemed like he was involved tangentially with the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. But no one has ever actually said anything about Tarantino specifically, have they?
There was stuff with Uma Thurman where he kind of let some things go that he shouldn't have. Kind of the Joe Paterno kind of thing. He didn't actually do it himself, but he was he had knowledge of what was going on and didn't act on it.
Right.
Well, that's the allegations that I've heard.
Well, the big thing that she came out with was that, like, that one, there's a scene in Kill Bill that she didn't feel comfortable doing that she ended up actually getting permanently injured by with her, I guess she's had outstanding back problems and such. One of the driving scenes where she's driving down a road and she lost control of a car, and she had expressed, like, look, I don't think this is safe, and maybe we should have the stunt person do it, and... Yeah, so that was one of, among other things that she had brought up. I don't know if you guys had read or heard about that.
I heard that as well. So. Did you ever read Burt Ward's autobiography?
Oh, no. Was he abused by Weinstein?
No, but besides talking about his own sexual exploits, which is the majority of the book, he talks about how when they were filming Batman, like, every day they'd go in there and they'd give him some unsafe stunt to do, and he'd end up the day in the hospital.
Oh, man.
How does that even work when he clearly becomes a 40-year-old man in the fight scenes?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
You know, the guy who's playing Robin in those fight scenes, his hairline is further back than mine. I'm not buying that that's Burt Ward.
Yeah, but there's some scenes where they, you know, where they come swinging in sometimes that it is actually them, and you can see them, like when they're swinging back, you know, in some of the big pullback shots of the fight scenes, there are some close-ups where you can see it is him swinging on like a rope across the room. I mean, you know, depending on how you land, you could hurt yourself when you if you land the wrong way and twist something. So, I mean, I could see the where he might get injured. You know, and just not maybe take a punch from a stuntman.
Oh, maybe the problem was that he took a punch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or maybe tried to do, yeah. So, all right, well, I think that wraps us up for news. And general jibber-jabber.
Such as it is, yeah.
Yeah, again, we need to come up with a new title for this segment, because it's really not news so much.
That's just, we just call it not news.
Or olds. Olds?
Excuse me.
It's time for olds.
I just, you know, usually it's just a general discussion. I don't know what the title for that should be, but...
Olds. We'll call it olds instead of news.
I don't want to call it olds.
Oh, why? Too close to home?
Right, I like that. No, just not quite clever enough. I'm sorry, Bill.
Oh, you son of a... All right. Yeah.
You almost redeemed yourself with the clever insult, though.
I know, but you had to, you know, retort back.
You torted and I retorted.
Torted. We need some tort reform.
Just don't tod.
Anyway, Nor the Battle to the Strong is the Season 5, Episode 4 episode. Well, that's, it was kind of repetitive, dummy. It's the Season 5, 4th episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, directed by Kim Friedman, story by Bryce R. Parker, which, on a side note, the character, one of the characters in the scene where the guy mentions, you know, Bryce Rann, that's why they used his name. It's like, oh, thanks. Yeah. Teleplay by Renee Echevarria, and our plot synopsis goes a little something like this, and it's kind of long, so hold on to your butts.
Strap in.
Jake Sisko is returning from a medical conference with Dr. Bashir. Oh, I'm sorry. That's what Jake was doing while they were returning from this concert, because, oh boy. So, although Jake had intended to write an article about the doctor, he discovers he's having trouble finding anything interesting to write about. This changes when they receive a distress call from a Federation colony which has just been attacked by the Klingons. Jake is eager about the potential for a good story and convinces Dr. Bashir to take him along to respond. Meanwhile, Chief O'Brien tries to get Major Kira, who is pregnant, serving as surrogate for the Chief's baby, to drink decaffeinated coffee, which proves impossible. Yes, that's that good old Quark to Geno. Then Commander Worf and Quark mansplain to... Oh, wait, sorry. Side with O'Brien in an argument of concerning over Kira's pregnancy, while Dax sides with Kira. Quark points out that Kira's pregnancy would be considered a, quote-unquote, rental on Fragonar. Captain Sisko enters and informs the others that Bashir has answered a distress call with Jake on board. Jake finds he has trouble handling the chaotic emergency room situation at the hospital, particularly triage, the sorting of a patient's severity. One of the patients, a Starfleet officer, claims to have been shot in the foot by the Klingons. Bashir later discovers that the wound was self-inflicted, intended to get him out of the fighting. Jake is disgusted by the man's cowardice. Everyone expects the Klingons will take over the settlement within days if no reinforcements arrive. Back on DS9, Constable Odo is still adjusting to being solid as he was released from the infirmary after a scuffle with a few customers at Quark's. Sisko hears how he was injured and learns he jumped off the stairs, planning to shapeshift and catch the culprits. Odo notes that though he is called a solid, humanoid beings are fragile. This makes Sisko worry about Jake's safety even more. But Odo assures him that Dr. Bashir is watching him. Yeah, he's got to be safe then. And that worrying will do no good for either of them. When Dax enters to update Sisko on the destruction of a Federation vessel, he pulls the Defiant to head for the colony, and leaving the entire station unprotected, and it blows up while they're gone. Oh, wait, no, sorry, that never happened. They could have! When the power goes out from a Klingon surprise attack, Jake and Dr. Bashir attempt to retrieve a portable generator from the runabout. While en route to the generator, they come under fire from the Klingons. Terrified, Jake abandons Dr. Bashir and runs from the bombardment. When Jake returns to the cavern, he finds everyone relieved to find him. Wait a minute, they cut out a whole subplot here. All right, we'll address that. Because no one saw him running, he claims that he became disoriented and was knocked unconscious. Bashir blames himself for putting Jake in danger, which makes Jake feel even more like a piece of dirt. No, worse for his own failings, and more so for his refusal to admit what he'd done. En route to the colony, Sisko works on pattern buffers to power up efficiency and thus keep himself distracted. To put Sisko at ease, Dax tells him a story about one of her past lives as a mother with a sick child. Though the child recovered, neither of them talk to each other for over 8 years. They smile and return to work as the Defiant draws closer to Jake. Jake talks to the soldier who shot himself in the foot, who is so distraught that he wishes he aimed his phaser up a little higher. Jake is also upset at how calm people are acting and yells at them, saying nobody will remember this war in another decade. Bashir consoles him and leaves him to his thoughts, which cause Jake to cry heavily after he leaves. Then, the Klingons attack while Jake is sleeping. As the medical team tries to evacuate everyone, Jake is attacked by two Klingons. He picks up a phaser of a dead guard and begins firing wildly, which causes a cave-in and knocks himself unconscious. Jake wakes to see his father and learns that because of the cave-in, the patients were able to escape. He also survives without much injury other than a few bruises. He's considered a hero, but he knows he isn't one, and so he decides to make the difficult decision to write the truth in the article, concluding that the line between courage and cowardice is much thinner than he thought. Phew.
That's the end.
That's the end. And that synopsis was long, but a little too long, and left out a very important...
Well, you're talking about the scene when he runs into the...
When he falls into the foxhole with the injured guard.
When he talks into the bad overactor, you mean?
Yes.
It reminded me of General Zod from Man of Steel.
You know what it reminded me of? Did you ever see the scene in Monty Python's Meaning of Life? when they're in the war, and Eric Idle is like an injured soldier, and he's laying on the ground. He's like, you don't know nothing. He's like really going overacting and stuff. That's kind of what it reminded me of.
I'm just gonna call him Space Gary Busey.
Yeah, all right. Well, we already have Space Peter Fonda.
Because he was just kind of like, don't let my face hit the dirt. Don't let my face hit the dirt. I want to see the sky. Give me another hypo.
What were your overall thoughts of the episode, though?
Like I said early on, as not remembering this, probably due to life things going on, this was pretty heavy. To snag a Back to the Future term.
I thought it was fairly powerful. I did. There were some cliches in it, but they were okay. They didn't bother me. I really didn't think
Jake was going to leave Bashir like that. I was like, whoa, wait, what are you doing, man? I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. And the thing with the guy that shot himself in the foot, you know, that was very...
That felt like it was off an episode of MASH.
It probably
and
was.
I don't mean that as a bad thing.
No. I know I've seen something like that before in another show.
If Rob Kelly ever listens to us, he could let us know.
Yeah. You know, or that one episode of MASH where Hawkeye snaps because, what you believe, it was the woman killed a chicken on the bus.
That was the very last episode that was.
Was that the last episode?
That was the last episode. Hawkeye is basically having a mental breakdown because of that.
I thought that was close to the end, but not the last 2-hour episode.
That was goodbye, farewell, amen.
Oh, yeah, and then actually it was a small child that the woman, she kills a child the baby was going to give away their position.
Not to go too much into MASH, but with that particular thing, any time like there's a baby crying and it's annoying me, you know, like you're in a movie and you hear a baby crying in my
head. Oh, you're a cold bastard.
I don't think about smothering it, but I do think, keep that chicken quiet.
jump, stand up and yell in the middle of the theater.
Because that's in Hawkeye's memory, that's what he says. So
yeah.
That's what I hear in my head. Keep that chicken quiet anytime there's a crying baby that I'm not patient with.
But it's very heavy with the themes of battle and, you know, Jake is... You figure Jake's... Well, one of the key things is like... that he says to Bashir is, you know, my dad has always been there to protect me, and he doesn't have his father to rely on, and he's faced with a fight or flight situation, and he flees. Which, I mean, he kind of... I don't want to say he was right, don't want to say he was wrong, because I've not been in that situation. I mean, yes, he's a fictional character, but you know, he's standing there and there's all these charges going off in between him and Bashir, and he doesn't have any training.
Yeah, let's not forget, he's not a Starfleet officer.
Right. So, but even if you do have training, like that's what they say, you know, the guy that shoots himself in the foot. Oh, I did so great in all the simulations and this and that. And you know, a simulation, you still always in the back of your head, no, I'm in a simulation, I can't really get hurt.
Mm-hmm. So, no matter how realistically made it.
Yes. And it's kind of funny because one of the things that I went through when I was in the service is they put you in a trainer which to simulate a ship sinking. And it's kind of like, I don't want to say a holodeck, but it's basically a big room that's on gimbals, you know, like to allow the whole room to tilt. Hmm. But it's actually a mock-up of the inside of a ship. On the top of it, it has a deck. It's in this giant warehouse. This is up in Norfolk, Virginia. And it's called a DC for a damage control trainer. And you go there, you get dressed up as if you're on a ship, and you take a torpedo hit. And inside the ship, it begins to fill with water, and you have to, they already have like pre-cut holes in the wall, and they begin to pump water into this giant room, and as the water fills like on one side, it actually tilts the whole room. Like you're on a movie set, kind of. So you're in this room and there's this water shooting you in the face, and you're putting these plugs in and hammering them in. So you're simulating your ship taking a hit and you're trying to save the ship. And then they do stuff like this trainer will stand there and goes, okay, somebody didn't secure the electrical power in this room. All of you guys lay down. You're now dead because you were electrocuted by the power. So you have to lay there and float in the water, and then somebody has to, quote-unquote, secure the power. They come down, put you on a stretcher, carry you out, put you up on the deck, and then people
I'd like
have
that.
To... That was one of the...
I would go float in the water funnest, right away.
That was one of the funnest things I ever did.
Was failing.
Was the damage control... I mean, at the time, I was terrified. Even though I knew I couldn't get hurt, it was just like, wow, man, this is... if this happens in real life, holy crap. So...
I'd be like, I failed. I'm going to float.
I'm dead.
Somebody carry me off. Come on.
You know, so they actually had to come down, put me on a stretcher, lift me up, carry me out, lay me on the deck, and they're like, you know, a guy's going, all right, he's dead. Put him off to the side. He's dead. Put him off to the side. All right, this guy, you know, we can... Then they simulate doing CPR. You know, like, okay, yeah, this guy, you can see if you can resuscitate, you know. And then... but the whole thing began to tilt. I mean, it was so... and then, at the end, they simulate abandoned ship. And they all... You're all inside, and the water's up to your waist. And there's water pouring in from every side, and you have to evacuate in an orderly manner, because you know, which you know, if it was real, it'd be like, get off, because you got to climb this like 10-foot ladder straight up out of the mock-up you're in, and at the top they have a fire hose on and it's pointing down, so it's beating you in the head as you're trying to climb the ladder to simulate water pouring in to the actual ship.
When they simulate abandoned ship, do they open a door and you see a silhouette of William Shatner there?
No.
Because this is basically you doing the Kobayashi Maru, Bill.
Oh yeah. Well yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that it was the no win. Yep. So there was the I do have to say that in well, I got gassed a few times by
well, that's poetic justice.
Very funny. Where they simulate the riot control gas and stuff. Nah, that stuff sucked. But yeah, that was I don't know. I've babbled enough.
No, it's actually fascinating. It really is. You know, I in my mind, I can understand what you're saying. You know, ultimately, your life really isn't in any particular danger. So you could.
I guess I could trip a Disney ride. this was a very realistic. Well, no, because I mean,
I'm not saying it's not
possible.
Difficult.
It is possible that while in there, I could slip and hit my head on something and fall unconscious in the water.
That's not the same as being on a ship that's actually.
No. But I'm saying that there is an element of danger. It's not like a Disney ride where you're completely safe.
No, but I would treat it like a Disney ride. Is what I'm saying. I would like la 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 la. I can't get hurt. Oops! I was electrocuted. Somebody put me on the gurney. Yeah. Which is really dumb, but it's what I would do.
So, but my whole point was talking about the simulations. It's like you, in the back of your head, you still know it's like, this is a simulation. You know, I'm not really going to get hurt. I mean, only if I'm really, really stupid or clumsy could I get hurt here. Yeah, it's a controlled environment.
So that eliminates me getting hurt, yeah.
You know, I mean, but it still raises your blood pressure and you know, your anxiety, and it's very... You know, you're trying to take a giant piece of like cork, and you got to wrap it in rags, and then you're trying to hammer it into a hole that's got pressurized water shooting at your face, and you're basically trying to bang all these plugs in to seal, because it looks like a jagged hole in the side of the ship. You have to slowly try to fill this hole before the water fills up to a certain level. You know, mm-hmm. It was an all day thing. I was soaked all day. Soaked to the bone.
I'm not saying you wouldn't be exhausted when it's done, too. Oh. I mean, I would expect that it would really be, you know, something that would wear you down.
But it was fun in a sick kind of way. Thank God I never had to really experience that in the middle of the ocean. Because that's it. That's why they train everybody on a ship in damage control, because you can't call the fire department when you're in the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to know. Oh, you know what? There was another trainer, and you'll probably think this one's cool. And this was a little bit more dangerous, but probably had more controls to it. To where you walk into, you're in an oxygen breathing setup, mm-hmm. to where you have a face mask. You're breathing oxygen from a canister, and you've got your firefighting gear on, and you walk into this building. With about four or five guys, you're all holding a fire hose, and you're in this concrete type bunker with a metal grating for the floor, and there's water at the bottom, but there's actually fuel. There's fuel on the water, and they ignite it, and it's on fire all around you, and you have to put the fire out, and they, you know, you slowly rotate from the guy that's holding the fire hose. And at different times, they can feed more fuel in to cause the fire to flame up on other sides. So you have to, like, you know, the guy taps you and says, you know, points, and you got to try to beat down the flames over there. Man, that one, too, really, more so than the other one, because, you know, water's okay. Fire?
Yeah, well, that one I wouldn't like. I feel like I could really get hurt in that.
Yeah.
I don't like pain. Pain hurts me.
Yeah, so yeah, that's some of the training that you go through, especially for the Navy. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, they do some of that in the Army, but they're more
Army training, sir.
But the Navy training is more for firefighting, how to save your sinking ship, CPR.
So the training is based on the theory that you will be on a ship that's going to sink.
Possibly, you know.
You people are terrible. So let's just assume. The worst case scenario. The Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's enough of my Navy talk.
They carry you off. You say, what do you suggest, sir? I suggest prayer.
Klingons don't take prisoners.
Yeah.
And yet we found ourselves in a Klingon gulag. How did that happen?
Who can say? I quite like this one. I thought it was quite deep and meaningful in comparison to last week's episode, which was light and fluffy. I think I got this one mixed up. There's one later on called The Siege of AR-558 with Bill Mumy in, and I thought that was this episode.
Isn't that the one when Nog gets injured?
Yeah, very similar to this one. An exploration of war for the ground, for people on the ground. Both of them I remember being quite good episodes. I thought this one was solid.
Yeah,
it was nice to see Jake Sisko not be a Starfleet wannabe in waiting. It was nice to see this guy, I can't do this, I don't want to do this, this isn't what I'm good at, but I can tell people what this is like. And I thought that was really interesting. And I liked seeing Bashir in this situation as well. I think the good doctor's come a long way since we started.
He's on full-on doctor mode.
Yeah, this is the very serious, highly competent Bashir, which we don't always see.
No,
we always see the highly competent Bashir, but we rarely see the very serious Bashir. He's not silly, but he's too pompous usually. And this is, this is no messing around.
Yeah, he knows the situation, he knows what he's got to do, and he just gets on with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it. I thought this was very effective. This had, Saving Private Ryan, Deep Space Nine. But it shows it to you, from the first party perspective of an outsider. Just the horrors of it all. And I think it does it quite effectively. I think it really did get that feeling to the point where it was a very good watch and it was a very good episode, but it's a very uncomfortable watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
You sit there and you're squirming in your seat a little bit, which is, I think, exactly the effect that they want to have on you as you watch this.
Yeah. I think the only weak spot for me was Michael Shannon in the middle, who was just a god-awful actor.
Yeah, that was, like, as we said, we made fun of that a little bit. There was a little bit of silliness in there, just in his delivery and...
What was that character's name?
Over-emoting.
But let me die looking at the stars!
Chief Burke, I think, was who that... He was in The Dark Knight and The Fugitive? I don't know.
He was playing the same role.
Alright, dude. Just relax.
Just die already.
I appreciated it for what it did for Jake's character. And the guilt that he was feeling over leaving Dr. Bashir behind when he ran. But arguably, there's not a lot he could do for Dr. Bashir. He was cut off by the shelling. He couldn't get to him. Yeah. So, from that point of view, surely the smart thing to do is for him to retreat and try and get to Bashir when he can. It doesn't make sense for them both to die.
Yeah, right, but then he got so...
What is he going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
He's got no military training. About it.
No medical training, so he can't
right.
help.
And then he got so disoriented...
Let me run into the middle of him right about it.
Yeah.
Let's use my training.
Yeah, he ran into the one battlefield with all the bodies on it. And did you notice when he was climbing up the hill? They didn't show it when he was there, but when he was walking away from it, they showed bathlets sticking out of people.
Yeah, sticking out of people's bodies, yeah.
Oof.
I thought this was quite a bloody one in places for Star Trek. And another thing you don't normally see, the scrubs were covered in blood.
Yes.
And there was they never get blood on a Starfleet uniform. And I love the... probably unconscious callback to Star Trek 2, where the guy grabs over Jake and leaves a handprint on his chest.
It's a word given!
Warp speed.
And then Jake goes, what are you talking about, man? I'm just a journalist. Get off of me. Oh, man, my shirt.
Ew. Does anybody get any stain remover? This was an uncomfortable watch, but in a good way, if that makes sense. But it's not one, when we talk about the flick test, because it's an uncomfortable watch, I don't know if it passes the flick test.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd leave this one on again if I was just surfing through. I did find it entertaining for the 44 minutes that I was watching it, though.
Yeah, well, it's a good episode. I often say that about certain movies, and Saving Private Ryan is one of them. I think it's an excellent movie, and that's what this one brought to mind for me, so that's why I bring it back. I think it's an excellent movie. It's well-acted, well-written, well-directed. And it was very, very effective when I watched it, but I have no desire to see it again because of the intensity of it. It's just it's a difficult watch. And I think, you know, this is a Star Trek version of that. It's not going to be at the same level as far as the dramatics and everything, but, you know, it has that same impact in its own way. And you know, I don't see myself rushing to see it again. Nor does my dog. Why don't you shut up?
Did you read the note about that in the original scene there was no, in the original draft there was no scene with him in the foxhole with Burke, but he was supposed to be a Klingon, but then they decided that, well, we're and the Klingon's blind, so he doesn't realize that Jake is human, and Jake treats him, and then the Klingon finds out Jake tells him that he ran, and the Klingon throws him out of the foxhole because he doesn't want to die with a coward. But then they thought, well, we can't humanize this Klingon in this episode when we spent half the episode trying to dehumanize him and make him, you know, bloodthirsty. So they decided to excise it and change it and put Burke in there instead. Space Gary Busey.
The part of his that I thought was effective was when he said something to Jake, and I'm paraphrasing, so I don't remember his line, but something about, you know, like that he's looking at this expecting a happy ending, and that's just not going to happen.
What does it say? Sorry, kid, life doesn't work like that?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah.
But I thought that was an effective moment, and I thought that kind of showed, you know, Jake's being, you know, really exposed to the horrors of war. And it was like I said, very effective. I don't like feeling that sad when I watch TV shows.
Yeah. Well, plus it's also only a happy accident that saves Jake in the end.
Well, and I think that was the point. I think they're trying to show that, you know, that's his thing, where, you know, the line between heroics and cowardice. The one guy who's dealing with all of this stuff shoots himself in the foot, and he's a coward for trying to get away. Meanwhile, realistically, Jake was just trying to, you know, do whatever he could to get away, and he's hailed as a hero.
Yeah.
You know, the irony of it all.
But how many times do you see people do that in movies where they just, like, shoot over a desk, blah, 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 blah. You know, it just so happened this was a phaser, and it cut into the ceiling and dropped the ceiling on the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, yeah.
Happy accident for Jake.
Oh, Jake, you're a hero.
I don't fool myself at all. I have no doubt that in a life or death situation like that, I would be a coward. I think about, like, in The Walking Dead, how what they go through. If I was in that world, I'd be looking for the most painless way to just commit suicide and not come back as a zombie. That's all I want. Just let me go away. You have a guillotine around here somewhere?
Think if I was in The Walking Dead, I'd be nowhere near Rick. He gets everybody killed.
This together.
There's almost an element of, what's, you know, the odds are against me surviving. The odds are that I'm going to die painfully to be chewed to death by zombies. And even if I do survive, is there any quality of life whatsoever? And my answers all, you know, all lead to me putting a bullet in my skull.
You know, there's, while watching this essentially for the first time, there was something that I had thought about. If I had watched this originally, that it may have come into my head, but possibly not, because I wasn't completely a parent yet. My child hadn't been born, so it really hadn't hit me. But the whole discussion to where, you know, Dax is trying, or is it Odo? When they're talking about Jake, and he's like, you know, he asked, you know, does your father still worry about you, to Sisko, and he's like, and he says, all the time. You know, it's like, even, you know, as our kids, my kids are getting older, and one's already off to college in another state, and another still lives here, and is going to college, and another's in high school, and then, you know, I still worry about them when they're not here, even when they're at work or you know, at school. Not worry, but especially for my daughter that's not here, because I can't get to her quickly. If something happens, she's got to be on her own. So it's you know, I, as a parent, I could connect with that aspect of the story. Being a father.
Yeah, you never stop fretting about them.
Right, because you've got children that are off and flown the nest.
Mm-hmm.
As in,
one thing I did like about this one especially was that Sisko didn't bawl Bashir out for what he did. He knows Bashir made the right decision to go and try and help. Mm-hmm. May have been a different story if Jacob got killed, but...
Doctor, what did you do? Why did you take my...
Yeah, and it was how Sisko was, you know, tweaking the replicators just to stay busy, to keep things off of his mind. You know, there was a lot of little things in here that just add up that made it, I think, a really good episode.
Indeed.
But enough about what we think. Unless we've got anything else to discuss.
Nope.
Blaine says... What did Blaine say?
Blaine says, "Hi guys, did you notice we're at war? Jake sure did. At least now."
That sounds so condescending.
I think it's
like
fantastic.
Duh.
It's heavy, and I like that it's honest about the level of bravery we see in a regular person in the Star Trek future. We still have flaws, even if the final result is noble. After a fashion. Jake's non-Starfleet background and the soldier who shot himself both demonstrate that not everyone is as perfect as the crews we've gotten to know, so they really are exceptional, even in the future. The problem I'm finding on this rewatch is staying focused on these early season 5 episodes, as I just seem to be counting down to season 5, episode 6.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll Dribbles. Be there soon. This is episode 4, so... yeah, I guess there is an element of knowing that's coming and being looking forward to it. Anybody who doesn't recall, that's the Trials and Tribulations episode. And, you know, generally considered an all-time great episode of the series. And we will see if we think that upon rewatch and discussion. But this, you know, I think we pretty much hit on, you know, the same aspect of it that Blaine did, that this was just a very dark and a dark episode showing the flaws of people, which is something we don't always see in the Star Trek universe. And I think that's something we've seen, not to this extent, but I think we've seen that in Deep Space Nine, and it's one of the reasons that we enjoy it so much, is not everything is clean and shiny and perfect.
This, I think, we had discussed before that this title came from a Bible verse, which I'm now looking for and cannot find. Andy, you still have that up?
Let me scroll down. I'm sure it was on Memory Alpha. Yes, it's at the bottom here on Memory Alpha.
Ecclesiastes chapter 9, yep. Verse 11. Do you want me to read it, or do you want to read it?
No, you can do it if you want.
Oh, but you did it, but you're English, and it always sounds better.
Okay, I'll do it. Okay. The title for the episode, as Bill said, comes from the Bible, appears in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance happeneth to all of them.
Which I guess is kind of the theme, not only the title of the episode, but kind of the theme. You know, talking about how, I guess, you know, things aren't always as romanticized as we believe. That, you know, the winner isn't always the strongest.
Yeah, I mean, the one guy shoots himself in the foot, and then Jake is the hero, like we said, because he just happened to bring the ceiling down and saved everybody. And yeah. It's just and that's time and chance.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's a deep episode, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
Want to rate it?
Yeah, I'm going to rate it, you know, even though I kind of feel this, is, for me, is a first-time viewing, it... You know, it really, there was a lot going on, very, very deep. I'm going to give it four phaser foot burns.
Andy?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for four as well. I think it's a solid episode, very well put together. A lot going on, quite meaningful for a Deep Space Nine episode, but I think all the more because it focuses on Jake and Bashir, not two characters you would normally put in a war story.
That's right, and I hadn't even thought about that aspect of it, but I think that's why, like, one of the reasons why the episode is effective is because Jake is so unfamiliar with war, we're seeing it through his eyes, and as I assume the very, very large majority of the office is not familiar with, you know, what it feels like to be at a war, so he's our point of view character. And, you know, I think that's very, very effective. And I'm going to go, you know, make it universal. We're all at 4.0 on this one. So, you know, despite the fact that I feel this doesn't have tremendous rewatchability, that's not due to a lack of quality so much as a lack of fun. It is not a fun episode, and a lot of times to me the fun episodes are the ones that are most rewatchable, so that's kind of what it comes down to for me. It has nothing to do with quality wise. I think this is a 4.0 episode.
Right, I agree. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, we have no email and we have no Stitch in Time, so what are we doing next time?
Well, just to confuse us, they have once again moved episodes around. But next time, for us, Keiko returns from a journey to inform O'Brien that she's really an entity that has taken possession of her body. The assignment.
Taken over by an alien entity.
If you don't do precisely what I ask, I'll kill your wife.
O'Brien's wife becomes a pawn in a deadly game.
We don't want to raise suspicions, do we?
To save her.
I want my wife back to here.
How far will he go?
We have a saboteur on the station.
How much will he sacrifice?
I make the rules.
Who must he betray?
God help me.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Keiko just has no luck.
No, she doesn't. Well, so her husband wants to be shagging Kira, and now he does get to shag somebody else.
Something to was look there, forward to.
There was Next Gen. No, that's right. Keiko wasn't taken over, but O'Brien was taken over by something. Mm. Right?
Is this this season's Let's Torture O'Brien episode?
No, didn't we have that already?
No, that was last season.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's the episode that just came in. Yeah, that's right.
But I expect it. I don't recall specifically, but I expect there will be an episode where he's more tortured than this.
But last episode wasn't bad enough. He's got to have the hots for Kira, and he can't act on it.
Oh, that was just dumb.
I know.
But I expect that, you know, he needs to be tortured more than he has. You know, at least once a season, he has to be physically tortured. So we haven't gotten to that yet. Something to look forward to.
And yay, torture O'Brien. Yay.
But until next time, thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ow, my foot.
That's not a phaser burn. That's diabetes.
Oh, crap. Self-inflicted over years.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Sit, Ubu, sit.